I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that has its own kind of rhythm, even if the older pair of us can't even begin to carry a tune. The jury is still out on Nathan. Anyway, rhythms are on our screening docket this week as we review the Aretha Franklin biopic Respect, which is playing both in theaters and on various streaming services. We'll discuss our reactions to the film, which stars Oscar-winning actress Jennifer Hudson as the late Franklin, and then we'll share our choices for some of the best musical biopics ever made. Let's begin this week's show by paying the late Queen of Soul a little respect. Aretha Franklin died in 2018 at the age of 76. The last thing she reportedly said was a single word, Bernadette. It likely was a reference to the Four Tops hit song, which would be appropriate since Franklin and that group had performed a number of times together over the years. Appropriate too, because both belonged to a golden era of soul music, one that earned Franklin the title Queen of Soul. In her biopic of Franklin, director Liesl Tommy benefits greatly from the casting of Jennifer Hudson as Franklin. Besides being a past Oscar winner for the 2006 film Dreamgirls, Hudson is maybe the only person who could do justice to such Franklin hits as Think, A Natural Woman, and of course the song that literally spells out its message, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Well, I don't think there's any denying that Jennifer Hudson was probably the only person alive right now, at least, you know, in terms of household names that could convincingly play Aretha Franklin. I think it's a very short list of people that could do that. And I think her performance is easily the best thing in Respect, which I don't think is that good of a movie, unfortunately. And I am a huge Aretha Franklin fan and was very wary about going into this because so often we see great artists with a huge songbook and troubled lives and iconic statuses just get kind of neutered in really conventional formulaic biopics. And I think this is another one. And this movie kind of falls into the same trap as something like, for instance, What's Love Got to Do with It, the Tina Turner biopic from about 20 years ago, which is that, or 30 years ago now, which obviously Aretha Franklin had a very troubled life. As you mentioned, she had her first child when she was still a child herself and was abused as a kid and suffered through alcoholism for a lot of her adult life and was in abusive marriages as well. And you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't when you're telling stories like this, because you don't want to gloss over the hardships that someone like Aretha Franklin went through. And as you alluded to, Dan, in your intro, it no doubt inspired a lot of the feeling that was in her music. But after a while, movies like this do just kind of feel like a catalog of horrible things happening to a great artist. And I feel like the artistry itself gets missing a little bit. I mean, there's probably a good 30 to 45 minute chunk of this movie in which Aretha Franklin doesn't sing a single song. And I thought, what is going on here? This person that was best known for this almost supernatural otherworldly talent, and we're only hearing snippets of songs. And it isn't until about, like, I think it's the 50 minute hour mark where she finally sings Respect, the title song. And the movie comes alive whenever Jennifer Hudson is singing. I mean, she is an incredible vocalist and does these songs justice. So I had a really hard time with this because, you know, I think it does justice to certain elements of Aretha's legacy. And I also liked the passages of the movie that were about her in the recording studio in Muscle Shoals with this all-white band of session musicians and kind of watching her direct them and manage them. I wanted the movie to be more about that, more about the music, because I think people forget that Aretha Franklin was a great musician and one, like, a natural musician too. I mean, she learned to play the piano by ear and was a great piano player. So I wanted more of that, less of sort of the hardships. I didn't want the movie to completely cut those out or soft pedal them by any means, but it's kind of all the, at least the first two thirds is about. And I feel like Aretha Franklin as an artist and as a person that survived these things kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit.
I think the timing of this movie is a little bit jarring as well. I mean, I meant the time sequences. So for example, we have kind of a heavy emphasis on her early childhood and her relationship with her father, who was this all-powerful figure sort of in the household, to the extent that her mother is basically driven away and he controls everything in respect, the Aretha Franklin biopic. But then all of a sudden we skip forward, I don't know how many years, and all of a sudden she's an adult with two kids and we're like, what, how did this happen? And so the sequencing was a little off. You're right, Nathan. What is the focal point of this movie? Is it her story as a human being? Is it her story as one of the quintessential soul performers and musicians of the 20th century? Or is it about her legacy as an activist? Because interestingly, I thought Respect did probably bring that aspect of her persona to the fore for a group of people who might be unfamiliar with that part of her life, because she really was involved in the civil rights movement in a variety of ways, not only through her father, who was a friend of Martin Luther King, but on her own behalf in terms of getting involved in different causes. At one point, Martin Luther King Jr., played in the movie by Gilbert Glenn Brown, reaches out to her and says, can you do this? Can you do that? And he says something, you know, whenever I call, whenever I ask, you're always right there to support civil rights and the movement and so forth. And I think maybe people, and I'm not saying younger people necessarily, but people might be less familiar with that. And then Respect does a decent job, I think, of sort of going through the trajectory of her starting out gospel and then focusing on, you know, what we've come to know as soul, finding her own voice as a female performer, then finally returning her to her roots, her gospel roots, which of course we're familiar with because of the recent Amazing Grace found footage, I guess you could say, of the concert in LA. And so I think that, I think I liked this movie more than you did. It's pretty long. It's almost 2.5 hours long, and probably some better or different choices could have been made, but it's worth seeing for Jennifer Hudson alone.
I'm glad that you brought up the documentary Amazing Grace, because I've reviewed this film, and that's one of the things I pointed out, that to get a full feel for what happens in this movie, it might be good to schedule yourself a triple feature one night to watch the documentary Muscle Shoals, to see how she worked with those musicians in Alabama, directed them, but also was inspired by them to create her kind of music. And then to watch the documentary Amazing Grace to get a full version of what Aretha Franklin could bring to the stage.
Well, and I also like the part with Mary J. Blige. It's a brief sort of cameo, but I'm always fascinated by people who, you know, in one context as, you know, a singer, for example, and then she shows up and it's a little bit over the top performance in some ways, but I appreciated that incident, which actually happened with Etta James and not with Dinah Washington, apparently, but yes.
Well, and I mean, the supporting cast here is good. You have Marlon Wayans as her first husband. Forrest Whitaker is her father. Audra McDonald is her mother, who is literally and metaphorically sort of a spectral presence in her life. I thought the stuff with her mother was okay. I don't know. I just thought that this was, we've seen this a million times, taking a complicated life and sort of hammering it into the square pegs of a conventional musical biopic. And again, I don't know what you're supposed to do with this kind of material. Like, do you expand it into a miniseries? I tend to like when biopics kind of focus on like one moment in an artist's life and then kind of extrapolate from that. So maybe it would have benefited from a more focused or tidier construction, but I don't know. You keep saying make this a triple feature. I don't think you need this movie at all. I mean, just go watch Amazing Grace, because I think you learn more, weirdly enough, you learn more about Aretha Franklin as a human being and as an artist, just watching her perform and watching her interact with the congregants of that church and with the choir in that church. It is such a transcendent, incredible film. And I didn't feel any of that in this, even though her final performance, Jennifer Hudson's final performance of Amazing Grace, which closes the movie, is, you know, it's impeccable. It's great. Once those sequences end up on YouTube, just watch that. You don't need the movie that surrounds them, in my opinion.
Well, all I would say is that to watch Amazing Grace and to get a full feeling for what her relationship with her father was, who sits primarily right there from front row, and he's immortalized in this film, then you see respect and you go, oh, there's a lot more that's going on, which, hey, that's real life. At any rate, that was our discussion of Respect. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to share some of our picks for what we think are the best musical biopics. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Getting the spirit in the dark. I'm getting the spirit in the dark. People moving, oh, and we're grooving. Just getting the spirit in the dark.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Aretha Franklin biopic, Respect. Now we're going to share some of our candidates for the best musical biopics ever made. When we decided to try to choose among the films in this category, I had no idea there would be so many, and two, so many variations in style. I should point out that we chose among films that were based more or less accurately on real people, from, say, George M. Cohan to Eminem to Joan Jett. We don't agree on every one, but most of those we'll talk about have something worth mentioning. If not the music itself, then the directorial style, or in most cases, the lead performances. And one of the things that, Nathan, you and I were talking about when we were trying to discuss how we wanted to handle this was the difference, as I just mentioned, in style in some of these movies, because some of them are straight biopics, which is what Respect was, which was what Bohemian Rhapsody does, which won Rami Malek a Best Acting Oscar, but others are really off the wall. And I wanted you to pick out a couple of those that you might have liked.
Well, sure. And I also wanted to say that I'm sure we'll talk about some more earnest, well-meaning biopics in the Respect mode, but I'm surprised they're still making those after Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story with the John C. Reilly parody, which specifically made fun of Walk the Line and Ray, but was kind of a lampooning of all of the conventions. So if you haven't seen that, that's like maybe the best biopic, even though it's about a fake person. But yeah, I tend to gravitate towards the more unusual kind of formula busting biopics. And I always admire it when a movie about a real life musician can sort of adopt the personality of the musician that the movie is about. Like there's something kind of fundamental about it. Like on a genetic level, the filmmakers understand who these artists are beyond just what they look like, how they sounded, all the most basic signposts of their life. What were they really about? And some of the ones I could think of off the top of my head were Love and Mercy from a few years ago, which is a really unusual film about Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, specifically about making pet sounds and smile, and his mental deterioration during that period. And it's set both in the past and in the present, and it doesn't work all the way through, but I think that movie really gets you in the headspace of this eccentric, troubled artist in a way that I think a more traditional biopic wouldn't be able to do. And frankly, Brian Wilson doesn't deserve a traditional biopic. He deserves something weird and experimental, and something that takes a lot of chances that maybe don't always pay off.
Explain to us exactly what was wild and experimental about that movie.
Well, the scenes that are set in the past are, you have Brian Wilson played by Paul Dano, and those sequences will sometimes immerse you completely in the studio or completely in the recording sessions. And Brian Wilson famously suffers from auditory hallucinations, and the movie tries to recreate those so that you really experience them. And then the scene set in the more present time, I think it's the 80s or 90s, you have Brian Wilson played by John Cusack. Those sequences I don't think work as well, but it's interesting to see the same artist played by two wildly different actors. Another movie I wanted to call out really quick and that I rewatched last night is a 1993 film called 32 Short Films About Glenn Gould, which is about the Canadian pianist who basically retreated from public life in his early 30s and then died at 50 unexpectedly of a stroke. And that movie is told, as its title suggests, in sort of these kind of fragmentary chapters. It's almost like a mixed media collage kind of movie. And it really gets you into the mindset of this guy, but also into his artistic approach, because he was kind of taking these classical forms and trying to break them apart, sort of impressionistic, cerebral kind of ways. And the movie follows suit, and it's on Amazon Prime as a rental. If you haven't seen it, I think that is maybe the gold standard for how you make a non-traditional musical biopic.
And speaking of non-traditional approaches, I mean, one that popped for me was Born to be Blue, with Ethan Hawke. That's the biopic about Chet Baker, the trumpet player. And that was sort of meditative in a sense. And it was filmed in a very interesting way. It was not, again, your standard, let's tell the life story of this person. You know, it sort of segued back and forth between different aspects of his life.
Yeah, and if we're talking about experimental, what about the 2007 film, I'm Not There? It was about Bob Dylan, but Bob Dylan's nowhere in the movie. He's played by people such as Christian Bale, Cate Blanchett, and a whole slew of other people. And that movie was a bit out there for me, although I did enjoy it.
One of the struggles with doing these biopics is once you focus on the artist, so are you trying to find somebody who's going to imitate the original artist? Are you going to find somebody who's going to channel the original artist? So putting aside the more creative ones that we just discussed, if we're going to look at pure performances, and that's what we were looking at with respect to Aretha. So Jennifer Hudson certainly does justice to Aretha Franklin's music and legacy and so forth.
Yeah,
in respect. So which of the biopics would you say accomplish that same end with respect to other artists?
That's a great question, because you have to wonder if they start with the casting and then work their way backward in some of these cases. The one that I always go to is Sissy Spacek as Loretta Lynn in Coal Miner's Daughter, which won her an Academy Award in 1980 or 1981. And in that case, you had someone that not only looked like the real thing, but could perform like the real thing. Sissy Spacek does her own singing and guitar playing in that movie. And it's such a convincing performance. And you really, that's one of those situations where you can't imagine anyone else playing that part, aside from Loretta Lynn herself, of course.
Right. In talking about people who've played these, the one that I remember is Gary Busey playing Buddy Holly in the Buddy Holly Story in 1978, or Lou Diamond Phillips playing Ritchie Valens in La Bamba.
Well, intriguingly, we just talked about two of my favorite performances. One, in the documentary Val, we got to see Val Kilmer perform as Jim Morrison in The Doors, which I think is a classic performance. We also found out that he sort of carried that performance over to his real life, and that wasn't necessarily a good thing for anyone. And then the other one that I'm thinking about is Sid Vicious, of course, in Sid and Nancy. Again, create some other problems, but I thought that that was a good portrayal. And I really did like Chadwick Boseman's performance as James Brown in get on up. And so I think, you know, we could go on and on about, can anybody think of any bad ones? Like ones that you definitely would not recommend. Nathan, you've got to jump on this one.
Well, what I was going to say is that, because I was thinking about that, because I tend to gravitate more towards, say, a documentary about an artist as opposed to a narrative film about an artist. I feel like you learn more that way. And usually you hear more music that way. But I think your response to a musical biopic is usually, not all the time, but usually directly related to how much you like the artist that the movie's about,
True.
How much you know about them before you walk into the theater or press play. So for instance, a movie like Straight Outta Compton, which was a massive hit about the rap group NWA, that has some embarrassingly clunky scenes in it where it's distorting reality to fit its agenda, or it's trying to shoehorn sort of biographical information into the dialogue. And yet the performances in that movie, I think, carry it. And also the fact that I went in already liking that era of music, already liking the band that it was about, I think that helped carry me through it. I think if I went in and wasn't already interested in 1980s hip hop, I might have just shut that movie out completely. So that's a good example. On the flip side, I think Bohemian Rhapsody, which has come up, I'm a big Queen fan. I loved hearing those songs and seeing them recreated, but the movie itself is not fit to shine the shoes of Freddie Mercury.
How about La Vie en Rose, which won Marianne Cotillard? Yeah. It won her an Academy Award. I mean, and we can run on and on and on. Tom Hulce as Mozart in Amadeus, but it was F. Murray Abraham as Salieri who won the Best Supporting Actor.
Great.
Going back to classic films, James Cagney as George M. Cohan in Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Or Diana Ross in Lady Sings the Blues.
Exactly, exactly. There are so many of these. Jeffrey Rush as I forget the character he played in Shine, but it was the real life character. He won an Academy Award for that. And then Forest Whitaker as Charlie Bird Parker in Clint Eastwood's film Bird. There are so many of these movies. David Carradine as Woody Guthrie in Bound for Glory in 1976. Jessica Lange as Patsy Cline in Sweet Dreams. You know, most of these movies, as you talked about, Nathan, they're formulaic. Come from humble beginnings, crisis, I struggle, I get a hit. Oh, then I hit the heights and then I hit the depths and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Bruce Springsteen story. Maybe Bruce Springsteen will play Bruce Springsteen.
He's already doing it.
Let's put it out in the universe.
We could go on and on because there are so many of these movies, but we have to come to a close for this week's Movies 101. We were listing some of cinema's best explorations of music and the musicians who performed it. Before that, we talked about the Aretha Franklin Respect. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late Queen of Soul herself, Aretha Franklin. It's the rough side of the mountain that's the easiest to climb. The smooth side doesn't have anything for you to hang on to. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.